Well, good morning. Very thankful that we can be here this time. I mentioned a little bit of this to Brother Marvin Wednesday night. I feel like the Lord has been dealing with me and talking to me about trust and how, well, I'll just say this in beginning. Trust is a pretty small word. You ever look the definition up? You look it up, there's, it seems like, a lot of factors that go into trying to describe trust. There's just, when I looked it up, it was like definition after definition after definition, just a little bit different angle or different perspective about trust. And how many definitions is there for the word hot? Probably not many, is there? I mean, we all know. I mean, it's very clear in our mind. Hot. Maybe it could be used in other applications, but when the word hot is used in relation to temperature, we know what that is, right? But sometimes the simplest term can really, we start digging into it, can be more complicated. So I want us to think about trust as a journey, as a trust being the ultimate destination, but trust becoming increasingly more powerful in our life. So I'll read you a definition I have. It says, confidence, a reliance or resting of the mind on the integrity, veracity, justice, friendship, or other sound principle of another person. That's just one definition. But there was multiple. Maybe if I'd have printed it off, it might have filled a whole page. So there's lots of different ways to try to describe trust so we understand it. And as I think about it, trust is can be provisional or positional. There is a level of trust that if you come to this congregation and you weren't here before I came here, There's a level of positional trust that you assign to me. All right? If you predate me, then there was a level of trust that had to be earned before I was in the position of positional trust. Does that make sense? So, in the Bible, there's 134 verses in the King James Bible that have the word trust in it. Most of those verses are referring to trust in God. But there's a number of them that talk about trusting other things. All right? So I would like to try to address trust in begin by trying to make two points today. One of them is, what is trust? kind of the definition. The opportunity to build trust is everywhere and every time there's an interaction. If we have an interaction with one another, there's an opportunity to build trust. And I like to think of it like this, that ever positive interaction that we have just adds a little bit more of the trust factor. It doesn't have to be a complicated interaction. We don't have to buy and sell some real estate or vote in a president or anything like that. We can just be in one another's presence. Maybe we have lunch together, or maybe we agree that we need to make a repair on the chapel, and we come together, and two of us or more, maybe there's three or four of us that work together on a common goal. Maybe two or three of the sisters, maybe you got together and you made the cinnamon rolls before camp meeting. That was an opportunity to build trust in one another. There are things that happen when you're making cinnamon rolls, and I don't know anything about making cinnamon rolls, just to make it clear, but if you're making cinnamon rolls, there is opportunities there to build trust, but there's also an opportunity to take something away or destroy trust. And we've probably all heard the old saying is, one step forward and two step backward. You've heard that? Somebody says, well, how's things going? Well, you might say, I'm making one step forward and two steps backwards. And I'll just ask the children, if you're taking one step forward and you take two steps backwards, are you moving forward or are you moving backwards? You're going backwards, aren't you? Okay, so if you have one positive interaction and trust is built, you take a step forward. My trust has, whatever the level you started with, my level went up a little bit. And then the next interaction that you have was not good. There was something there that caused you to have reservations. There was something there that may have had a little pain in it. Then you're going to, it seems like that you lose what you gained the time before, and then there's a level of suspicion that comes in on top of that. It just, it's like having, it's like opening a loaf of bread or a package of cheese and finding mold on it. Now, if you don't want to eat the mold, I have before, just FYI, but if you don't want to eat the mold, just how much of the bread or the cheese do you break off? You know, you got to make a decision about, is this good or is it bad? And there's always this question of, do I throw the whole slice away or just break off half of it or the corner of it or whatever it is? So trust kind of works that way. I wished it worked different. You know, a negative and a positive just counteracted. But honestly, the way it works in real life is if we have a negative experience, we lose more than what we had before the negative experience. All right? So we're trying to talk about what trust is. You know, sometimes trust is forced on us. We won't have a choice. We have to trust. Every time that you come to an overpass, a bridge, or something, you are forced to trust. If you're not thinking about it, you probably will after this. Between here and Carthage, there is, I have to cross, what's the name of this creek? Is it Center Creek out here? I have to cross Center Creek, and just so happens where it's at, it's not like West Virginia, but it's a pretty deep, there's quite a bit of distance between the bridge and the water. And for me to cross Center Creek, going home or coming here, I have to trust the bridge. And I don't know who made it. Brother David might be able to tell us when it was put in there, but it's not a new bridge. It's older than 20 years. I know that for a fact. It might be 50 years old. There's a bridge in Carthage right now that they have closed the road because the trust factor has got to the point we don't trust it anymore. I had trusted that bridge and crossed the railroad tracks and Spring River going into Carthage. And maybe a day or two later, I come up there and it says road closed and they won't let me through. And it's because someone done some inspection and said, we don't trust this anymore. So I went from being able to have a shortcut into town to now I've got to drive way around because trust has been impaired. But we sometimes our trust is kind of forced on us because it's subletted. You know what a sublet is? You go to someone to build a house, and they're going to sublet different jobs out to different people. You might trust the contractor, but he trusts the man that hangs the sheetrock, the man that frames it, he trusts somebody that finishes the sheetrock, and you may be building a new house and you show up and there's somebody there in a vehicle that says XYZ Plumbing on the side of it, and they're in there putting pipes together, and you don't know them. But sublet trust sometimes happens. We trust financial advisors sometimes. Sometimes the preacher and the pastor is a subletted trust. You show up, you don't know me, maybe. You don't know the person that's going to stand in front of you. And someone else you went with because they knew or they had some trust and you trusted them, and now you're subjected to that subletted trust. Just trying to get us a picture of how trust works and what it is. Trust is a must have in any long-term relationship, marriage, obviously. If trust is damaged, it takes marriage from a beautiful, harmonious existence to a miserable existence if trust is not there. Trust is something that's important in an occupation. If there's no trust in an occupation, then there comes in all kinds of other factors like micromanagement and other elements. There's elements of trust that has to happen between you and the customer or the client, however you refer to them. I've talked to, he was there at the camp meeting, and some of you may know him. He lives in Ohio. His name is Brother Rick Cox. I don't know if any of you know who I'm talking about. But he's done home repairs, remodels. You need somebody to fix the back porch, he was the person to call. And he has, he's retired, a little older than I am, so he's retired, and And I was talking to him one day, and he said, I haven't sold any of my tools or equipment. He said, I'm keeping that. He said, I told everyone that I would be able to take care of any warranty repairs. If something failed that he done, he give everybody a 2-year warranty on his whatever he did for their house. And he said, I'm keeping everything for at least 2 years before I really disperse of, I don't know what he had. Maybe it's a commercial vehicle. I don't know. But I thought, you know, he had a business where people trusted him. That was very important in that. And it was very important for him to maintain that trust. You know how good it feels to be able to trust? Trust is what enables us to sleep at night. Trust is what enables us to relax and feel comfortable in another person's presence, in a place. What makes us feel uncomfortable, maybe keeps us awake at night, is mistrust or a lack of trust. And I'm trying to help us understand here what trust is. I believe, this is kind of a homegrown definition, I believe trust is a willingness to allow someone else to have control over something that's more valuable than the exchange. All right? We don't charge admittance here. Sometimes I think we might have more people show up if we did. I don't know. It's just a rationale. I mean, people pay to go see something that hurts their ears. So we don't try to hurt people's ears here, so maybe we'd be half price of that. But we don't charge for admittance to come to church. But you're trusting, when you come in here, you're entrusting something that's much more valuable than the entry fee. We're coming in here with a level of trust that my soul would be benefited. The soul is the most valuable thing that any of us can ever be in possession of. And we're entrusting that to the atmosphere, to what might be said, what might be done, the actions, everything that goes on, we're entrusting that. And we didn't pay anything to come in. And we don't expect somebody, we don't require anybody, let's put it that way. Obviously, we expect money to show up from somewhere to keep the lights on, but we don't require anybody to pay on the way out either. And you've entrusted some of your time. Our time and our soul is the things that are the most valuable to all of us. And we've entrusted that. More valuable than almost anything else that we've got. And we entrust that to someone else, to something else. So trust is a willingness to allow someone else. And unless you're completely zoned out this morning and reading something else or listening to something in earbuds or hearing aids or whatever, if you're listening to something else, then maybe you're not being as impacted as much. But if you're paying attention, you're being exposed to something here this morning, and you're subjecting yourself. You're willing for someone else to have a little bit of control. And I've said this before, but hopefully it'll mean more from now on. I really appreciate when people come to service and is willing to trust this little chapel, this little congregation, the people that are here. I'm so thankful when people are willing to come and trust some of their time and some of their spirit and expose themselves to what is going on here. That's trusting. There's places that I won't go because I don't trust what goes on there. There's activities I don't want to be part of. There was something going on last night. I didn't have time for it. But it was something that's interesting to me. But I had to think about what else I would be exposing myself to. And I realized that by and large, the risk outweighs the advantage. So it means something. It really means something when somebody is willing, although we're not standing there charging admittance, it really means something for people to trust their time and expose their soul to what we have here. And I want them to go away with them one notch closer, if you will, to the Lord. I don't want them to go away singing just what I thought church was all about. I wished I'd have stayed in bed this morning. I don't want that. If you got up earlier than you normally do on Sunday morning to be here, then thank you for coming. We've exposed ourselves to something, and there's a level of trust. And I want it to be a positive thing, not, I'll never do that again. We've had those experiences, right? I won't do that again. I'm not going to listen to that person talk. I'm not going to expose myself to that situation. I'd like to turn to 1 Kings, the 18th chapter, and I would like to read a little bit here about trust. And there's a story line behind all of this, but I'm not so focused on the storyline as the options of trust that's presented in 1 Kings, the 18th chapter, and I want us to look beginning the 19th verse. It says, maybe at the 18th verse, and it came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah that Ahab said unto him, art thou he that troubleth Israel? That just sets the tone for a negative experience, doesn't it? There's that troublemaker. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, look, when they look up and see somebody coming in, here comes trouble. You ever heard that? That's what the situation here is. So the next verse says, and he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandment of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam. Now therefore, sin, and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel. I'm reading in the wrong book. It's 2 Kings. I apologize. I knew this wasn't sounding right. 2 Kings, the 18th chapter, and beginning in the 19th verse. Now therefore, O Lord, our God, I beseech thee, save thou us out of his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord God, even thou only. So the situation here, will give you just a little bit of the story. I'm not so much interested in the story as the options of trust. The situation here is King Hezekiah is being confronted and threatened by an enemy king, from the king of Assyria. And he said here, Lord, have mercy on us. We're being threatened. We're being intimidated. Verse 20, then Isaiah the son of Amos sent to Hezekiah, saying, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, that which thou hast prayed to me against Sennacherib, king of Assyria, I have heard. This is the word that the Lord has spoken concerning him. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, hath despised thee and laughed thee to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem hath shaken her head at thee. Whom hast thou reproached and blasphemed, and against whom hast thou exalted thy voice and lifted up thine eyes on high, even against the Holy One of Israel? By my messengers thou hast reproached the Lord, and hast said, with the multitude, to the height of the mountains, to the sides of Lebanon, and will cut down the tall cedar trees thereof, and the choice fir trees thereof, and I will enter into the lodging of the borders. I'm looking for it. Always reads better if I get in the, it's the same story, but it's the 18th chapter. I'm sorry, folks, I'm really mixed up this morning. So ultimately, let's finish that there just a little bit. I think that's still good. By thy messengers thou hast reproached the Lord, and hast said, with the multitudes of my chariots I am come up to the height of the mountains, to the sides of Lebanon, and will cut down the tall cedar trees thereof, and the choice fir trees thereof, and I will enter into the lodging of his borders, and into the forest of Carmel. So he goes into a long explanation of what Sennacherib is doing, and what ended up happening is, in the 35th verse, and it came to pass that night that the angel of the Lord went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. So the Lord took out the enemy for the Israelites. And that was the end of the story. Now let's go back to where I originally intended to read. I think I've got this right this time. I'm sorry that I've been so mixed up. 18th chapter, 2 Kings, beginning the 19th verse. And Rabshakeh said unto them, now he is the messenger from the king of Assyria. Seek ye now to Hezekiah, speak ye now, not seek, but speak ye now to Hezekiah. Thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, what confidence is this wherein thou trusted? So there has to be a level of confidence to have trust, right? How do you get confidence? By good experiences, by good interaction. He says, thou sayest, but they are but vain words. I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom dost thou trust that thou rebellest against me? So this messenger from the enemy king is saying, you go tell Hezekiah, you're saying that you have everything you need to do battle against us. But what are you really trusting in? He says, now behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt. Have you ever taken a sharp stick and put your hand on top of it and tried to use it as a walking stick? What happens to your hand? You're gonna poke it. That's not the way to do it. I mean, if it's got a sharp end, you want to put it down, maybe where it'll dig into the dirt or the gravel or something. But he says, now behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, on which if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh of king of Egypt unto all that trust him. But if you say unto me, we trust in the Lord our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah hath taken away, and has said to Judah and Jerusalem, ye shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem. So, I'll give you a little bit of backstory. There's some people that think that this Rabshakeh, that's a messenger for the enemy, was a Jew that had defected. And he knew that Hezekiah had been disabling the high places and the groves and the altars around. He'd been taking out idolatry. But this Jew that had defected said, you've taken out all these other places. And Hezekiah says, you got to come into Jerusalem to worship. What was in Jerusalem? The temple, the Ark of the Covenant. What was in the Ark of the Covenant, children? There's some manna in there. There was some proof that God was real in there. And Hezekiah was trying to build people's trust in who? In God. And he said here, now therefore, but the enemy is saying, are you going to choose in Egypt? Are you going to trust in Egypt? Are you going to choose to trust in this God that you've been tearing down the high? He wasn't tearing down the high places for the worship of the Lord. It was idolatrous practices that Hezekiah was taking down. He says, now therefore, I pray thee, give pledges to my Lord, the king of Assyria, and I will deliver thee 2,000 horses if thou be able to, on thy part, to set riders on them. How then wilt thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants and put thy trust in Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Am I now come up without the Lord against this place to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. Did you know that the enemy wants to come and try to disrupt our trust? And the point I want us to try to get now, I tried to talk a little about what is trust. And now the other point I want us to get to this morning is trust is ultimately a choice. You think about that. Trust is ultimately a choice. We can have all of the evidence where someone else can have trust, but ultimately we have to choose whether we will trust or not. A wife can do everything in her power to be trustworthy. If the husband has given her control of, I don't know, whatever you want to think, put in the blank, whether it's finances or managing the house or whatever it is, and she can do everything that she should do, but ultimately the husband is going to have to make a decision of whether he's going to trust her or not. And the shoe fits on the other foot too. The husband can call when he's leaving work. He can have a GoPro on his helmet at work so that she sees everything and everybody he talks to all day long, but ultimately she's going to have to make a decision whether she trusts him or not. You can look around and you can see, you can know that the manna is in the Ark of the Covenant. You can know, you can see the presence of the Lord. You can feel His Spirit working. But ultimately, you're going to have to make a choice. Do I trust it or not? The Israelites were faced with a threatening situation. And this man that was spouting off was trying to intimidate them into not trusting God. We done read what ultimately happened. What ultimately happened was they trusted the Lord. Hezekiah spread the letter out before the Lord and said, Lord, if you don't help us, we're going to be in trouble. And the next morning, the enemy woke up dead. Or they woke up and the enemy was dead. I don't know which way you want to think about that, but there was 145,000 of the enemy that no longer existed because they trusted God, because he came through for them. But it was a choice that the people had to make. It was a choice that Hezekiah had to make. They could have caved in. You know what it means to cave in? It means that you choose not to trust. And you give in to the threat. Joshua, you remember what he said to the people? He laid it all out. Read the old law. Read the promises. Read everything that was going to materialize or should materialize. And he said, choose you this day whom you will serve. It's a choice. Are we going to trust or are we not going to trust? Proverbs, the third chapter and the fifth verse. I believe I got this one right. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. He says here, trust in the Lord with all thine heart. And lean not to thine own understanding. It's going to be a choice. We can understand what trust is. We can understand that we're giving something that's valuable to someone else to have control over it. You know how valuable our understanding and our thoughts are. You know how many, one of the children's memory verse was about wisdom and searching out witty inventions. Y'all notice that? You know how many witty inventions have been uncovered by mankind's understanding in our world today? The simple fact that as I'm speaking now, my voice is being conditioned and amplified and broadcast. If somebody is, I don't know if they are or not, but if somebody is connected with a Zoom link, all of that this morning is because of witty inventions. Have you ever seen one of the early recording devices where they had the big megaphone that went down to the needle that scratched on the carbon little tube or whatever it was, and they recorded sound that way, no electricity at all. But because of electricity and electronics and one witty invention adding to another one, and another one, and another one. Now we can speak to someone completely across the room and across the world because of witty invention. But you know how, that's valuable, isn't it? But he says here, trust in the Lord with all thy heart and lean not to thine own understanding. You ever say, I got it? You ever heard anybody say that? I got it. That means they understand. They can lift it. They can move it. They can take it apart. They can put it together. They can make biscuits or whatever it is. They got it. And it's because of understanding. But he said here, trust in the Lord and lean not to thine own understanding. When we surrender our own understanding and trust the Lord to guide us, that's a choice. And that is something that we're surrendering that's very valuable. God knows that. I know this is kind of bouncing around, but in Psalms it talks about arrows in the hand of a mighty man. And you know what those are related to? They're related to children. Our children are very valuable. I want you children to know that this morning. You're an incredibly valuable asset to us. And we as adults want to guide you and direct you in the best way possible. We're asking you to trust us. And you're going to trust us somewhat because it's positional. We're your parents or your grandparents. But we want that exposure to trusting us to be one step and another step and another step to where you have absolute trust in your parents and in the folks that you go to church with. I want the trust level to be, as another expression might be, off the charts. But I just want to introduce this morning, that trust is a journey. The stronger it is, the more valuable it is, the more valuable it is, the more powerful it is. Trust is something that can move a lot of things. You pray for me.